Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Dr. Rachel Kleinfeld, who's a senior associate in the Democracy and Rule of Law program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, where she focuses on issues of rule of law, security, and governance in post-conflict countries, fragile states, and states in transition. She was the founding president of the Truman National Security Project and was appointed to the Foreign Affairs Policy Board, the advisory board body to the United States Department of State. She's the author of Advancing Rule of Law Reform Abroad, The Next Generation. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Rachel Kleinfeld.
Thanks so much, Ian.
And Rachel, we just were speaking with David Rothkopf, the publisher of Foreign Policy, and he has an article there, Is America a Failing State? And since you've dealt with failed states or failing states, let me just read the first couple of lines of this article. We have a tin-pot leader whose vanity knows no bounds. We have the rapacious family feathering their nest without regard for the law or common decency. We have utter disregard for values at home and abroad, the disdain for democracy, the hunger for containing a free press, the admiration for thugs and strongmen worldwide. We have all the makings of a banana republic. But worse, we are showing the telltale signs of a failing state. Since you've dealt with failing states, how do you rate the condition we're in now?
Well, I don't think we're there yet, but I actually agree with David that we are showing a lot of the signs. You know, democracies are, it looks so strong when you imagine the Supreme Court, the White House, the halls of Congress. But those are just buildings, and if you go to a lot of failing states, they have some nice buildings as well. What actually distinguishes a functional democracy from a state that is so polarized that it enables crime, it enables violence, it enables kleptocracy, it enables your democracy to fall apart, really the only thing that distinguishes those two are institutions, bureaucracies, norms of conduct, really fuzzy things that mean people uphold certain rules. And we're seeing the president ride pretty roughshod over those rules. But I think much more worrisome to me than what Trump has been doing is Congress, because it's easy for one man to want to amass power. That's not unusual at all. The whole point of a democracy is that there are checks to that. And what we're seeing right now with particularly the Republican Party in Congress deciding to go along with this rather than upholding the structures of democracy, that's what will turn our country into a failed state.
So how long will this craven behavior go on then? I mean, obviously, they're getting the agenda that they want, so they're tolerating Trump. Indeed, if they are embarrassed by him, which they surely should be. I mean, isn't that at the end of the day the most telling thing about this administration is the sheer tackiness of it? When you have members of the Kushner family in China raising funds on the basis of selling green cards and with showing pictures of Jared and Trump, there's just such a tacky quality to this. I'm just curious to know why people aren't embarrassed.
You know, Trump voters voted to end corruption and business as usual in Washington, and I think that's a very reasonable thing to want. No one who's spent much time in Washington would deny that there is institutionalized, legalized corruption, and that business as usual is not always in everyone's interest. Those Trump voters did not vote for a kleptocracy. They didn't vote for an oligarch who wants to use a presidency to enrich his family. And I would hope that we could, as a country, evade the kind of language that further polarizes, because that's what's going to lead to a failed state. It's the polarization among the electorate that leads people to justify things that they know are unjustifiable. And so I think what we really need to do is not necessarily talk about tackiness, but talk about what kind of a government did you actually want, and are you getting that, or are you getting the exact opposite? And if what we're getting is an oligarch who's enriching himself at the public's expense and using his presidency to make more money, every American should be upset at that, and that's what we should work toward.
Well, I will restrain the adjectives and adverbs, but the larger point I was trying to make is that we have a unique political system where the political head of the country is also the head of state. We don't have the Queen, for example. And I think the American people expect a certain dignity in their leader. Even during the worst of the Monica Lewinsky affair, Bill Clinton maintained an air of presidential dignity. I don't see that happening here, and I wonder whether that I'm correct in detecting a sense in the American public that they expect a certain decorum.
You know, one of the things that happens as countries decline, as democracies decline and fall into polarization and violence, is coarsening. You see a coarsening of the political language, you see a coarsening of activity and so on. And I'm not going to speculate about whether voters want that or not. I don't know, and I haven't seen anything to prove it one way or another. But I think we're certainly seeing it, and I think we've been seeing it for a while, really, certainly since Bill Clinton's Monica Lewinsky days, that coarsening of what's allowable in political discourse and of what the public expects. You know, JFK had affairs and all sorts of peccadilloes. No one reported on them. It was a very different era than what we expect today. So that coarsening worries me, because it's that allows one side to demonize another side. It allows you to pull leaders down to size, but you don't actually want leaders to be just like everyone else. You want them to be a little better than everyone else. They've got a lot of power, and our failure to do that will further hurt our democracy.
So just in terms, though, of the, you know, being nice to despots and hanging up on allies, which has unfortunately been the pattern so far, although Donald Trump did appear to make up with the Australian leader the other day on the 75th anniversary of the Battle of the Coral Sea. But today in the White House, he hosted the foreign minister of Russia, Sergei Lavrov, and wouldn't let the American press in, but let the Russian press in. And I mean, my sense is, well, why would you let the fake press in and not the real press? But then when you consider that 89% of Donald Trump's voters think that he's honest and trustworthy and will fulfill his promises, and 78% of Trump's voters think that the mainstream media propagates fake news, we already have an Orwellian situation, do we not, in this country?
We certainly have a situation that is not conducive to making good policy, and we have a situation that is stunning for its lack of, really for the lack of the American people coming together to say this isn't acceptable. And the fact that the American people have to get our news from Russian news outlets is unacceptable, and it should be unacceptable to any American, regardless of political party. And making these issues partisan, which is Trump's modus operandi, in order to defang them, it has a long, long history. When you look at the oligarchs of the late 1800s, early 19th century, you know, the Gilded Age in America, they did the exact same thing. They stole hand over foot. They bribed politicians. They became politicians in order to make money. And meanwhile, they made things so partisan that Republicans and Democrats stayed in their silos and refused to accept findings like the Lexow Commission's findings in New York that found that police were paying for their positions and using brutality and all sorts of things. That political polarization that Trump is trying to do to our country is going to destroy it.
So what can be done then to, because I can't see how such an extraordinarily important and powerful country as the United States can survive if there's no consensus about what is real and what is true. And because of these silos where people are retreating into and doing what they call reality shopping, what can be done, do you think, given this division of fake news? And it is a bit extraordinary that the person who propagates fake news has managed to convince his people that he's telling the truth, and the people that try to present the truth, like the failing New York Times, are labeled as fake news. So there are the battle lines. So what can be done to bridge the gap?
You know, I wish I had an answer to that. I think that there is something a little overblown about the problem of fake news, in that most countries at most periods of time didn't agree on the facts. News is generally partisan and politicized. It's only been really since the 40s and 50s that America's had these sort of overarching trusted news sources that we all go to. Before that, it was political broadsheets, same as in other countries. So I don't think the issue is so much that the news itself is fake. It's that there is a there is a lack of cohesion to overcome it later. We've been in this period before, I guess is what I'm trying to say. We've had news that's been this untrue on both sides. We've been in periods of contested facts. The issue is deeper, and it has to do with the American people and what they want out of their country, what their aspirations are for their country.
But beyond the news, what I find frightening about the Trump administration is, and again, it's more like Stalinism and less like George Orwell, and that is the attack on science. I mean, Stalin attacked science with this quack scientist, Lysenko, and it caused widespread famine because he was a total fraud. But he became the fake science and real science. They sent them off to the gulags. Now, they're not sending off climate change scientists from the EPA. They're not being sent to the gulags, but they're being fired from the advisory boards. And there is this fake science, this global warming denial that permeates the government, not just the EPA. The president himself is a denier. And at any moment now, he's going to apparently pull out of the Paris Accord. So that's what worries me even more than fake news, is fake science.
You know, I know I'm going to sound like a one-hit wonder here, Ian, but people get the country they deserve. They get the government they deserve. And in this case, the American people have been moving away from science for a while. And it's not just climate change. That's one aspect of it. Frankly, as the mother of a two-year-old, I find the anti-vax campaign even more worrisome. That's causing a huge outbreak of measles in the middle of our country. It caused a measles outbreak in Florida. You know, that's killing people right now. Climate change will kill people over time. But there are parts of the same phenomenon. It's people who distrust elites and who distrust expertise and who want to protect themselves from a sense of inferiority, perhaps, or some such, by telling them that that kind of knowledge doesn't matter. But it has deadly consequences. And it's up to all of us within our society to fight that. The anti-vax campaigners, they often target the left. The climate change deniers target the right. But it's the same aspect of society that's saying science doesn't matter.
Well, I guess because there's no question that the anti-vaxxers are both on the left and the right, as are the 9/11 truthers. And, you know, they all sort of meet in Alex Jones land.
In the crazy
right. So my sense is, though, that at the core of it all is alienation. And I think Donald Trump was able to win over an alienated constituency. And obviously Hillary Clinton failed to, because, you know, she was represented the status quo and he represented the insurgency. But what can be done then about alienation? Because to me, that's the recipe for, you know, the path to accepting some kind of autocracy, if people feel so disengaged from their own government. Because in social democracies, you own the government. You know, you pay your taxes and you get your government services, and there's a transaction there. I think the process of alienation has been a long one, but I'm wondering what could reverse it.
You know, I think you're putting your finger on the real issue here. I mean, Trump is epiphenomenal. The alienation caused him. That was who hired him. And the alienation will cause equally bad things to happen to our democratic structures if we don't solve that problem. I'm not sure what will fix it. I think we do need to change business as usual in Washington. I think the diagnosis that we had elites who were self-dealing and helping themselves at the expense of the people is true. I don't think it was true for the reasons that Trump voters tended to think it was true. But I think that we have a country that is no longer really in touch with a lot of its people. That's causing an opioid epidemic because people are so depressed. You know, we have these diseases of despair is what the scientists are calling them, that are on the increase in America among white middle-aged Americans whose death rates are increasing when in all the rest of the world that group has a longer lifespan. So dealing with that despair and alienation is the issue. How to do it? You know, I work in politics. That's really an issue for psychologists. But I do think that those of us in politics need to start talking to psychologists and behavioral psychologists and people who deal with that problem, because that's the way we're going to fix our politics.
Well, Dr. Rachel Kleinfeld, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thanks so much, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Dr. Rachel Kleinfeld, who's a senior associate in the Democracy and Rule of Law program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She was the founding president of the Truman National Security Project and was appointed to the Foreign Affairs Policy Board, the advisory body to the United States Department of State, and is the author of Advancing Rule of Law Reform Abroad, The Next Generation. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back examining how federal employees can continue to expose the truth as the Trump administration cracks down on internal dissent and weakens open government and ethical standards.